to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello, beautiful listeners. We're glad you're back for part two with Irene Chapman. We found out that she took sort of a long journey to get to Israel. And now that she's there, with no children yet, she and her husband are there, and they have moved to Beersheba is the, I guess, correct pronunciation, because they went to Hebrew school, learned how to speak the Hebrew that the commoners who lived there spoke. And then after being in Jerusalem, the Lord said, now on you go to Beersheba.
And you know what I love too, Irene, about part one is just all the places you've already been. And just your willingness to serve the Lord, not necessarily like, I'm going to go there and speak to the masses, or I'm going to do this, kind of without an idea, but just, yeah, I want to go. I want to see what it's like to serve the Lord. I want to meet these people in a different country, and I want to be where it's warm. And so I like all those things and the spirit of adventure and just, you know, how you met your husband. It's, if you haven't listened to part one, please go back and listen to it. You're going to absolutely love it, especially her love story. I love the love story and how wonderful her mother-in-law is and that she's a little bit of a prophet. So that's all very interesting. So now as you've moved to Beersheba, and how long have you been in Israel now when you moved to Beersheba?
1 year.
1 year. And so you're still pretty much newlyweds then.
Yeah.
Getting to know you and stuff. Okay, so you're in Beersheba. And what were the doors and things that the Lord opened and all of that? Tell me.
Yeah, so serving in Israel, visas are one of the big issues. So the first year we were in and out every 3 months on a tourist visa, and that gets really stressful.
Right.
There was one time we were diverted to Budapest, and I got strip searched, and they took all our luggage for a couple weeks, and it was really unclear whether they were going to let us back in. And we just looked at each other and we were like, we cannot keep going on this and going through this stress every 3 months.
Security in Israel is the toughest. I mean, they'll make you, if you go through Heathrow Airport, you go through Heathrow security and then you have to go through Israel security. And it's peppered
intense.
With questions. It's intense. They'll take you in a room all by yourself. And yeah, it's very intense.
So even though you go back, you don't know if you will be let back in.
Yeah, I mean,
you just have to carry with you whatever you have. You can't expect anything to be waiting for you. Wow.
I mean, I can't even count on two hands at that point, even in that first year, how many people we knew that had been doing that same thing, going in and out every 3 months and been turned away at the border and, you know, locked in a cell with a cell phone. And then we had to deal with their stuff on the Israeli side, but very stressful. And so we had talked with some other people who had been missionaries there for a long time, and they were the field leaders of a denomination's mission there. And so we said, you know, what do you think about serving here in Israel? You have the big picture, you know, what do you have to tell us? And so they suggested that studying was a good way to have a pretty steady visa. And so there was this university in Beersheba, Ben-Gurion University, and Anthony applied, and he was accepted there to do his master's degree in biblical studies.
Wow, what a place to get your master's in biblical study. Yes.
Yeah, so he started doing his master's degree, and it's usually a 3 or 4 year program, and he took 7 to do his master's degree. So we moved down to Beersheba for that, and, you know, it was one of the places, like I said, we talked to this missions director, and we said, you know, where can we meet the regular Israelis? Jerusalem, it's great, but it's full of tourists and it's very transient. And where do we meet the regular people? And they said, well, there are two cities. There's Arad or there's Beersheba. Those are the only options they gave us. So I don't know why there are a lot of other options, but those are the ones they told us would be options. So we would go every other weekend, like 1 weekend to Beersheba, 1 weekend to Arad. And we just felt like the Lord was leading us to Beersheba. So we went and he enrolled in university and took 7 years on that. And then how many kids did we have then? 4. We had 4 kids at that point.
Okay, you didn't have 4 kids. You had 4 boys. There's a difference. And your boys
3 boys and a girl at that point.
3 girls
and
a girl, right. And they are energetic.
They are.
Even the girl's energetic. I remember like,
so much fun.
Wow.
It has to be.
Yes.
With all the company.
When I first met them, all they were moving parts, like every place. And she was mastering it so well. I was like, oh, more power to you.
Yeah, you were jumping in puddles with them.
Yes. Well, I love children. Yes.
So they're close in age.
They are. Yeah, the first four were born within 5 years of each other. My fourth was born 3 days before my first's fifth birthday. So I was real excited because I had him at the hospital, and then I got home in time to make a Spider-Man cake for my 5-year-old.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you are what missionaries are made of.
I don't know about that. You make the rest of the missionaries nervous because they think they're supposed to be.
Yes, yes, yes. I would have been, there's no cake this year.
Yeah.
It's really important
sorry.
To him.
Yes, yes. Yes. So, okay, so then you're in Beersheba. So what was like an average day for you besides, you know, watching these kids, and where did you live?
So we lived in this little tiny apartment in the middle of the city.
So you don't have a yard?
No.
No yard.
I mean, not have a yard.
See, that is so different. I mean, especially when you consider you're in an apartment with four kids and you're in a city, the fourth largest city, you said, or one of, it's city life with four children in an apartment while your husband is going to school.
Yeah.
Now, was your income from support, from missionary support then?
It was, yeah.
Okay, and we know how that goes. It ebbs and flows. It's
a faith walk.
Journey. It is a faith walk, yeah.
Absolutely.
So we have money for food. We don't have money for food, but God will provide in some way.
And he always has.
Yes.
Always. There's never been a minute when he hasn't. I know there were times that we were on our knees on the floor like, Lord, we don't know where the next bills are going to come from. But they always did. They always came.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So do you have a particular story of God's provision?
I tell this story a lot. So
that's good.
My daughter's going to be like, that one again? But yeah, we were flat broke. We were toward the end of his master's degree. So I had four kids at that point. And we just felt like we had to go to this renewal conference in Switzerland. I had met the lady, she and her husband run it. I'd met her at this other conference and she said, you have to come to this conference. And so we talked about it, but we were flat broke. And then Anthony says, you know, I think maybe we should go. I said, okay, but have you looked at our bank account? Because there's nothing there. So he's like, no, we're just going to go. We're going to go. We have to go. So we look at airline tickets, and my husband's really a researcher. You know, he just got his doctorate, but he's a researcher. So he was researching all the airlines that flew between Israel and there were three cities around Switzerland that we could have flown into. So he's researching all these different possibilities, and he finds this no-name airline, Meridiana. It doesn't exist anymore.
And there might be a reason for that, but we don't know.
And they had really cheap tickets. We were like $300 round trip. So he goes in and he puts in all our information because they have a route from Tel Aviv to Milan, puts in all our information and he goes to check out and it's $600. And I'm like, oh no, their website must be broken. Who did you forget to put in? And so we look at it and we call them because it just is not making any sense. And they said, oh, there's a promotion actually on that route from Tel Aviv to Milan. During those dates where kids fly free under the age of 12.
No.
And we just started laughing because who ever heard of an airline promotion where kids under 12 fly free? And we had four of them.
Yes.
So we got to the conference and we went and the Lord renewed us and it was great. But it's just one of those ways where you can't imagine it and you can't even pray for it. Like, Lord, could you please give us an airline where the kids don't have to pay for their tickets? You know, it's just one of those creative ways that the Lord provides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know my dad died several years back and we were talking with my mom about budgeting and I said, oh, budgeting, maybe that's a good idea for us too. We should just sit down and make a budget. And so we sat down and we wrote out all of our expenses. And before we even set foot outside of the door to pay for parking somewhere, just our rent and our bills, we were $800 in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
From what our support was every month. But somehow we never carried over debt, and the Lord paid all the bills.
Can't explain it.
No, I just closed it up and said, okay, we're not budget people.
No,
it doesn't work here. I don't know what the Lord's math is, but it doesn't work on this spreadsheet.
Oh. I love that. Now, your kids were all born in Israel then?
They were.
So, I mean, that's something else, you know, because when you're having a baby, you want your mom. You want to be in a place that's familiar, and you're in Israel having your children. Did you have them in hospital? Or?
I did. Yeah,
did.
I'm a hospital kind of girl.
Me too.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're in a foreign hospital. My hospital was a little different. You know, they all spoke English. So you're in a hospital and you're having your children. And then, so they're very used to eating Israeli food then too, right?
Yes, they are. Yeah. American food has thrown them for a loop. We've been here for 10 months and they're like, what is this food? We want pita and we want hummus and we want falafel and we want a tomato that tastes like a tomato.
Yes.
Don't
yes.
we all?
I remember those.
Yes.
I remember those. Yeah. In fact, I've grown a couple just to taste
what taste a tomato.
Just taste that taste. Yeah. You know, when we first built Calvary, these were all tomato fields, all of this.
Really?
And it smelled like it, and you could go and you could pick them. You know, there'd be leftovers, and they tasted like tomatoes. And I haven't had anything that tasted even close to that in so many years. So except for when you go to Israel, you're like, here's a tomato. I remember this.
You know. So tell us what happened when it was time for the kids to go to school.
Yeah, well, when we went to Israel initially, we'd gone saying, you know, we're going to be here for 2 years. And so we never had the idea that we'd be there for 18.
That's how long it's been now, 18?
Yeah. So we went out 18 years ago. Mm. So had we known that it would be that long, mm-hmm. maybe we would have made different decisions. But you just make the best decisions you can with what you know and exactly. do it prayerfully and yep. do it before the Lord. So we were looking at the schools around us. We talked to our landlord. And, you know, in Beersheba, it is the fourth biggest city, but there are not a lot of options for schooling, especially. It's on the periphery of Israel. And the only option for them would be public school. So, and it's all according to your neighborhood. And so we lived in this one neighborhood and we would walk by the school and the kids would be at the fence growling. And we talked to our landlord and he said, I would not send my kids to that school.
Not a good sign.
And I said, no problem. I can homeschool kindergarten. I can do sure. kindergarten. So we started with kindergarten and then every year we would reassess and it just ended up being the best decision every year. I was never going to be a homeschool mom. It was one of the conversations we had at the beginning of our relationship, laying out how it was. I said, Anthony, I know you were homeschooled, but I am not going to be a homeschool mom. If you want someone who's going to homeschool your kids, look for another girl. It's not me. But here we are. We're yes. still going. They're going to be seniors next year, my oldest two. So,
that's wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah. We just figured their academic future was in English, so we'd teach them in English, and here we are.
So then, but they grew up probably knowing Hebrew and English both, just naturally.
Yeah, because all their friendships are in Hebrew. Mm-hmm. There aren't a lot of English speakers in Beersheba. So mm-hmm. so all their friendships, all their activities, church stuff, that's all in Hebrew.
Okay, I have to ask now, what did they do? Like, how did you keep them entertained? Was there a park nearby? Or, you know, how did you get that part of their, you know, their... You've got a lot of energy. How'd you get the energy out?
Yeah. So after my third was born, we moved into an apartment that did have a yard. Mm. That was one of my criteria because we would go days without yes. going outside right. and seeing the sunlight. So we did get a place with a yard and then they had a swing and a little,
yeah.
you know, splashing pool that they could splash in and we'd go for walks. Israel's a great place to have kids. You can take them out anywhere. They're welcome everywhere. Mm-hmm. Tons of great parks.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you notice. The people love children.
Yeah.
They even, you know, I'll bring my kids over and they just, my grandkids, they love children. We took our kids yeah. when they were little. So now I want to get back to the children and, you know, homeschooling and like the danger. You know, because Americans think about Israel and they're thinking of rockets and they're thinking of, you know, Hezbollah on one side. They're thinking of, mm-hmm. You know.
Hamas,
exactly. So how was your experience in Beersheba with that? Did you come across any of that?
We came across a lot of it.
Mm.
Yeah. So our first experience with the rockets was when my oldest was one.
Mm.
And they didn't have the Iron Dome. Now they have mm-hmm. the Iron Dome that really reduces the threat to the population. You know, these missiles that'll shoot down the incoming rockets. But back then, all we had was our stairwell and prayer. And,
wow.
And so we had our son there, and we'd just wake him up and pull him out into the hall whenever there were rocket sirens. Our neighbors would be out there. It was a great way to get to know your neighbors in this stairway.
It is bonding, you know?
Yeah. yeah. It's bonding. So I remember talking to my dad and I was a little bit nervous, but in the middle of it, you're strong and you're like, yeah, right, we're fine. And I remember my dad saying, well, there are a lot more places the rockets don't land than the places they do.
Thanks,
like, yeah,
Dad.
Yeah, that's true.
That helps so much. Thank you.
The logic.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're musicians. So my husband wrote a song based off of Psalm 91 in Hebrew during that time. And we actually got on national television singing that song.
Wow.
Yeah. We went to the local radio station and we were like, hey, we want to play you a song. And so we played it for the secretary because she was like, well, everybody's busy. And we said, oh, that's okay. We'll play it for you. So we played her this song that he'd written. And so she gets on the phone. She's like, stop what you're doing. These people are much more interesting than the clowns, because they had a story going on about these clowns that would go into the hospital. She said, they're much more interesting than the clowns. And so come on in. So they put us on the radio, and then the national television station heard that. And so they invited us to go to Ashkelon, where there were rockets every
seconds. Yeah.
So we took our little son over to Ashkelon. He's the little baby in our arms, and sang our song to Israel about how the Lord is going to just protect them. And so, yeah, the Lord opens up neat doors. But rockets are definitely a part of the kids' story. So once we moved out of that first apartment with no yard to the apartment with a yard, we also had a bomb shelter. So you just try to make it fun.
Yeah.
You know, the sirens would go off and we'd go. We called it the nest. And we just had all these little kids' beds, you know, around our guest bed.
And this is just part of normal life.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't think it's strange when you're there. This is how we live. This is how, you know, your children are just conditioned for that.
Yeah. So we went through several wars, and it's part of their story. They're not traumatized by it. It's just what you do. You know, the rocket sirens go off and you go into the room and you're safe and you reach out to the people around you and check and see how they're doing. And it's just the reality of living with an enemy all around you.
So after your husband had finished with his degree, then did you know what you were going to do next, or did it?
No, he finished his master's, and then we actually came back to the States. We packed up all our stuff and we left it there. I don't even know why we did, but we left it there and we came back to the States. And then the university called him and they asked him to come back and do his doctorate. And he said, no. He said, I've hated school since I was in kindergarten. Oh, I'm not spending another penny on my studies and I'm not coming back. And they said, well, we'll give you a stipend and we'll give you a full scholarship and we want you to come back. And nothing else had opened up. So we said, okay. So we went back and he took 9 years doing his doctorate and he just finished in July.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a brainiac, though.
So during the time that he's doing all the studying, but then the ministry opportunities are opening up for you around in your neighborhood, or what specifics started happening?
Yeah. So our first year in Be'er Sheva, our heart has always been just build up the local church, build up the believers, disciple the believers. We love worship. Our first year in Be'er Sheva, there was a student Bible study among some university students, and the girls were getting really hurt because the person in charge of it decided that the girls could come, but they couldn't have any input and they couldn't talk. So the girls came to us and they said, can you start a Bible study for us? And we said, sure, we'll do a Bible study. So we started a weekly Bible study with these students that wanted to come. And it just grew and grew and grew. And that actually became one of the main focuses of our ministry there is student ministry. So we had student groups going, just studying through the Bible. I mean, just verse by verse.
So good.
Through a book, leading. Yeah. It was discussion-based. It wasn't like a teaching so much as it was, let's read the Bible together and let's discuss it. So that just grew and grew. Anthony ended up being he was on the board, and then he was the chairman of the board for the National Student Ministry. So every Tuesday, that's what our life looked like. We'd have tons of students in our house, studying the Bible, doing cookouts, whatever, just being part of their lives. And we've actually, on this time that we've been in the States, we've been visiting several of them that ended up in the States and just checking
in with
them. Yeah.
I love that it's kind of incognito. Like, we'll just go to Israel and see what God has for us. Oh, it's through the school. Okay, well then, my husband will become a professional student and take all these courses. But that puts us right where we need to be for the Lord to bring people to us, and we just respond.
Yeah.
You know what? One of the funny things, one of the ironic things is one of the conversations that Irene and I had, she said, he hates school and he keeps getting all this, and I love school. And I love, you know, wait, what's going on? It's all reversed here. You know, and of course, you know, you can channel that into homeschooling those children. So now, what brought you back to the United States?
Yeah. So it was one of those times when everything aligns, and we just felt like the Lord was calling us back. There were some doors were closing for our kids, the things that hadn't been an issue before they couldn't do because they weren't citizens, different sports, different clubs and groups, that it just kind of became hard for my kids to be there. But then Anthony finished his doctorate. Finished his doctorate. His studies were over. Our visa was attached to that, so our visa was up. Our landlord wanted to give our house to his son.
Oh, yeah.
And
talk about the Lord closing doors.
I know. There are a few signs there.
So everything all together, and it was just time to go. So we left in July, and we left really on a high note.
That's the way to leave.
We were burned out, but we left really on a high note with people just surrounding us, and the Lord just brought a lot of healing to different things that had been, you know, out in the open. And yeah, we left on a real high note, and we came to the States, and we had 2 months to kind of acclimate. And then obviously October 7th happened, and the entire world changed in Israel.
Yeah. Yep.
So we had planted a church 3 years ago, and when we left, we turned the church over to a young Israeli guy. He's in his late 20s. And that morning, he went to work at 6 a.m., kissed his wife and kids goodbye, went to work. Everything happened at 6:30. By 7 o'clock, he'd already been called up. He was back at home getting his backpack and all his army gear and out to fight.
Oh.
So Anthony stepped back into pastoring that church from remote, by remote, by
home. Wow.
So we were on the phone all the time with him. I took a trip at the end of October. He took a trip in November and then in January. So we were visiting and part of it. But yeah, the whole world changed over there on October 7th.
Yeah. But you're still ministering, which is amazing. Okay, so you're acclimating. Oh, we've only got 2 minutes and I want to get to the motor home. So where you're at right now, because you're sojourners. You know, I love the fact that you're not trying to settle down or settle in, or you're just like, okay, Lord, we are open. So what does that openness to the Lord's leading look like right now?
It looks like the seven of us in a 40-foot RV trying to figure out what America looks like, introduce our kids to their passport country, and seek the Lord.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of at the point where we're like, Lord, we will do anything. Just let us know.
Yes.
Just want to know it's you.
Right.
We'll say yes. Just tell us what.
So you drove, you started in where, Rhode Island, and now you're in California right now with that motorhome.
Yeah, coast to coast.
Yeah. And where are you going next? Do you know?
I don't know.
But we just see how faithful the Lord has been every step of the way. So we know it's going to be interesting and amazing.
Yeah, we might have to do a part three. We'll bring you back in a year and go, no,
so what
how
happened?
Did you end up there in Alaska? You know, what are you doing there? You know, just to see what the Lord's doing. And just, you know, and I know sometimes when you're in the thick of it, you don't see it. Where others can call out what they see the Lord doing, like his faithfulness towards you.
Yes.
His protection of you. He does make it clear. And what he has promised, he absolutely does. Mm. And just seeing that your kids are walking with the Lord, they're okay living in a motor home with their parents and enjoying the adventure. I mean, you have raised and you are raising adventurers who are willing to just go wherever the Spirit leads. That's amazing.
They're great. They've all got really good attitudes. I love them.
That is so amazing. And they're here with you, too. Is your motorhome somewhere here?
It is.
I want to see it. That is so, so fun. So, Irene, we want to thank you for coming on, for being a part today of sharing your story, all the miracles that God has done, all the hardship. And we want to, we'll put on the website your address and well, your address is rotating, but you know, just how people can get in touch with you. Maybe if they want you and Anthony, they're incredible worship leaders, to come and sing, and just a little synopsis of your story. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you.
Loved
for
it.
Listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not so well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at wwk@cccm.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.